Bokeh Tov. We'll make a start, I think, on time, if we can. Thank you, everybody, for coming out. There are sheets around, if people have sheets. Do you have a sheet? There's a few more over here if anybody needs them, and there's a few sheets outside as well. I'd like to pick today a very different topic. Last week we spoke about cosmetic surgery. I don't know if anybody's run off to book anything in or not, or to cancel anything on the basis of that, of the discussion.
A bit late,
well, I don't know, it's never too late. This week I'd like to speak about a fascinating topic, which I've entitled here the International Date Line. When I give this topic to some of my younger students, they often get excited reading the title that I'm going to speak about Shidduchim. But actually, if that's what you thought, then I'm sad to disappoint. That's not my intention. It's actually something a little bit more, if you like, complicated. Well, I don't know if it is more complicated than Shidduchim, actually. But it's a little bit more technical, let's say, than Shidduchim, although we're not going to let it get too technical, otherwise we'll get bogged down in details. The basis of it is very straightforward. We live on a planet, and it's round. As we'll see soon, we've always really believed that. There are lots of sources, we're not flat earth people. We live on a planet and it's round, and it spins around, and it looks to us as though the sun moves. And obviously, depending on where you are on the planet, the sun is in a different position. That's very straightforward. And the further east you go, okay, towards China and then towards Los Angeles in that direction, the later it gets. And the further west you go, towards America, it gets earlier. Okay, so very straightforwardly, it's now 10:15 in America, which is much to the west of here, then it's much earlier in the day. It's only in the middle of the night. And whereas in India and China and Australia, it's obviously much later in the day. Everybody knows that. We live in a world of instantaneous communication. But there is, of course, a paradox. Let's say I travel east and I get later, and I go to India and then to China and then to Australia, and I get later and later and later and later. And think about that on the globe. It's later and later. As I go around, because we live on a globe, I end up back where I started from, okay, back here in the OU Centre, except now it's 24 hours later. Okay? And therefore, how can I be going round and around and around, and eventually it's actually a day later than it really is? There must come a place where the date itself changes. There has to be an international dateline. It cannot be that I can keep going round and round and round around the world, and I'm going forward in time or backwards in time. There has to come a point where the date flips, either back a day or forward a day, so that everything makes sense. And they began to discover this in the Middle Ages and the early modern period when they were sailing around the world. And they called it the circumnavigator's paradox. Meaning people were getting on ships and sailing around the world, keeping very careful track of the date. And when they got back home again, months and often years later, they were one day out. And they couldn't work out why. How could that be? We've all been keeping track of the date, but somehow or other, we're a day out. And they realized eventually that there has to be an international date line. About 130, 40 years ago, in 1884, they all got together in Washington, D.C., at the International Meridian Conference, and said, look, we need to draw some kind of a line. It's a bit random, but there has to be a line where the date goes back and the date goes forwards. And they decided as follows. We're best off putting it in a place which is as far away as possible, so that we don't want someone to live in a town where it's Monday on one side of the road, on Tuesday on the other side of the road. That seems very strange. So we'll put it in the middle of the sea where there isn't really anybody to complain. So they decided to make the line 180 degrees, because of course the world is 360 degrees, and there are 24 hours, and that divides very neatly, so that each hour is 15 degrees as you go around. Okay, that's very straightforward. 360 is a wonderfully flexible number. The Babylonians were the ones who really brought in the 360 idea, and we use it in halacha as well. It divides by many, many numbers without the need for any complicated fractions. So they said, look, what's the most important place in the world? Let's make that zero, and we'll make the international date line 180 degrees around the other side from that. So, when discussing what is the most important place in the world, the answer is obvious. It's London. And therefore, they decided that Greenwich, which is was anyway the dock, the port in London, is going to be zero. And 180 degrees around the world from that is going to be the international dateline. And therefore, if you look for a second on page two, flip over the sheet to page two, you'll see this. Here's a picture of the international dateline. It goes through the middle of the Pacific Ocean, 180 degrees around from Greenwich. It wiggles around a little bit here and a little bit there because there are islands. It's not quite uninhabited. There are islands like Kiribati and other places, and from time to time they change their mind as to which side of the dateline they'd like to be on. Sometimes they'd rather be on the same page as Asia, and sometimes they'd rather be on the same page as America. It depends on which way the wind blows. But basically, I'll let Mrs. Fachler in. Do you have a seat here? Yeah. We've got lots of room. Are you here? Excellent. Thank you. That's where the international dateline is. And it's actually very straightforward. If you've ever been on international flights and flown over it, it goes like this. If you travel east, i.e. you're going from Asia to America, you go back a day. Okay? So if it was Thursday, you cross the line going east into America, it turns back to Wednesday. Okay? And if you're going west and you're flying from America towards Asia, it goes forward a day. So if it was Wednesday in LA, you get on a plane, you fly across the sea, it turns into Thursday. Very straightforward. Now, for the world as a whole, it's really just a technicality. But for us, of course, it's really very critical. Because it's not just a question of inconvenience, well, it's Wednesday on one side of the street and Thursday on the other. It's Shabbos. How can you have Shabbos on one side of the street and Sunday or Friday on the other? It makes a very, very significant difference for us. We have all sorts of mitzvahs which are very time and date specific. What happens if it's in the middle of Hanukkah and you fly over the international dateline and you already lit yesterday four candles? Are you going to light four candles again, or are you going to skip and you're going to go to five because yesterday you lit four? What about the other way where you miss out? What happens if you flew on Sunday and you've crossed the dateline and Sunday afternoon, evening and Monday morning disappeared? And it ended up Monday afternoon. Well, see, that can happen very easily. What happens to Shacharis? What happens to Mincha and Maariv and Shacharis that just disappeared? Or what happens if you go the other way and you already went through that day? And it's like Groundhog Day. It comes all over again. Okay? And you wake up and it's Sunday all over again. And you already... Do you have to daven again? I already davened Sunday. No, but it's Sunday all over again. What if it's a fast day? And you fasted already, and it reaches just the end of the fast day, and you go over the dateline, and you're back on the night before. Do you have to do it all over again? Or what if, on the other side of the coin, you kind of missed the fast entirely, and you flipped over the dateline, and it's already tomorrow, and it went away? We don't do that many flights over the international dateline, most people, because unless they're shuttling back from America to Asia, most of the flights that most people in this room do are probably between Israel and America, Israel and England, and we always go within the dateline, we never really cross it. But you're well aware that, of course, as you're flying to America, everything elongates, and if you take off in the night, it's like a long, long night, and if you go the other way, everything goes much quicker. So there are lots of questions that arise. There is a fascinating flight that you can get if you work in Asia, and you can take off on 10 o'clock on Friday morning, okay? And you need to get home for Shabbos, and you can leave Asia 10 o'clock on Friday morning, and you fly, especially in the winter, Friday morning, Friday lunchtime, Friday afternoon, Friday evening, and you fly straight into Shabbat. And it's Shabbat for 3-4 hours, Friday night, and then you cross the dateline Thursday night, and you arrive back in New York on Friday morning, exactly the same time you took off, okay? But you were on the plane for 2 or 3 hours during Shabbat. What do you do? Do you make Kiddush? Do you make Havdalah? Do you make them both at the same time? Okay? Do you have to keep Shabbos? Do you have to take all the mucks out of your pockets for a couple of hours and put it all back in afterwards? Can you go to the bathroom and shut the lock that's turned the lights on? Well, what can you eat? This is a real shaila. This is not technical, you know, what would we do if we lived on Mars? How would we keep halal for shaila? This is a real practical shaila. I actually had one of my students' parents call me, because they noticed that I had a share on this, and he has a daughter living in China. on business. And it's quite, people live in Hong Kong. You know, people live in Hong Kong. And this is very relevant. So let's have a look at some sources and see what we can put together on this. And you'll see in the middle of this sheet why this is also a hashkafic issue, not just a halachic issue. And we'll bring that out. The sources are relatively straightforward. Look in number, at least at the beginning. We'll get complicated soon. Look in number one. Gemara takes for granted that the world is round. It says, Kolak Slamim Asurim, statues, Gemara no Avodah Zarah, are prohibited. Now, what's the problem with statues? Back in the Roman days and what have you, you never knew whether the statue was just for aesthetic purposes or whether it was Avodah Zarah, whether it was idolatrous. How can you tell the difference between them? So the first statement here is, Kolak Slamim Asurim. They're all prohibited. The Chachamim and the rabbis say, no, you don't have to be so strict. We're on source number one, okay? Makel or tipor or kadu. What's the problem? You only have a problem if you get a statue, say the rabbi says this opinion, which is the rabbi's opinion, which is something holding a stick or a bird or a ball. What's with the ball? Says the Gemara number two, Kadur, Shitofes et atzmo tachat kol ha'olam kulot kekadur. That he's, if you like, that's a god holding up a globe on his shoulder. You know that that is an idolatrous symbol. And of course we know that that is what we now call Atlas, holding the world on his shoulder, okay? And it takes it for granted that the world is a Kadur. Tosfos picks it up there, number three, and gives a very unusual midrash, and says, Kadur, Sheha'olam agol. Because the world is a sphere. Kidi'it of Yerushalmi, and he brings a very unusual medrash in the Yerushalmi, She Alexandrus Mokdon, Alexander of Macedonia, Alala Mala, went up in a plane, in a space rocket, Ad Shira Kol Ha'ulam Kikadur, until he saw the curvature of the earth like a sphere, Ve'etayam Kikara, and the sea spread out like a dish, if you like a plate, Perish Yamu Kiyanushimakivs Kol Ha'ulam. What exactly it means that Alexander went in a space rocket and saw the world looking like a globe, I'm not getting into now. Obviously, it's a midrash, and there has to be a midrashic explanation as to what Chazal are getting at. That's a different discussion. For now, let's just be satisfied that everybody thought the world was round. Okay? Obviously, they were always flat earth people, but that wasn't our lot. It was the other lot, whoever they are. Now, this particular issue became very relevant to Halacha in the 1940s. As many people are aware, the Mir Yeshiva managed to receive exit visas to get out of Europe and eventually ended up in Shanghai. Before they got to Shanghai, however, in China, they were for a while in Japan, in Kobe. And they had a shaila, and they wanted to know, have they already crossed the halachic dateline? Is there a halachic dateline, or is there only the secular international dateline? Now, Japan, if you go from Europe to Japan, you do not cross the secular international dateline. It's still the same day. But they were concerned that they may have already crossed, that the dateline actually may be to the west of Japan, not where the secular dateline is. And even though the people in Japan think it's Thursday, it might halachically be Wednesday. And it was important for them because Yom Kippur was coming up, and they want to know, which day do we fast? Shabbos is not such a problem. You can always keep 2 days of Shabbos. And people, by the way, do. People who visit New Zealand, and sometimes Japan as well, they often keep Saturday a Shabbos, and Sunday they keep like a day and a half. You look like the people who in the 1.5 day people in Israel who are not sure if they're keeping 1 day Yontif or 2 days Yontif. They keep the first day as real Yontif, and the second day they don't do any Doraitas. So there are people who go to visit New Zealand. I know people who visit relatives there, and they keep Saturday and Sunday. They keep Shabbos, and they keep Shabbos like a half day on Sunday. Not half day in terms of time, but they keep the Doraitas, not the Rabbos. But Yom Kippur, you can't really do that so easily, because there's a mitzvah to eat on the day before Yom Kippur. There's a Torah mitzvah to eat. It's not so straightforward just to fast 2 days in case. And they sent letters out to a number of the leading poskim in the world, in particular the Chazon Ish, Rav Tukachinsky, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, and we are going to look at today what they responded and how they responded and how that affects us. Turn please to the top of page 3. Let's look at the first and most complicated position. The Chazon Ish, wrote back to the rabbis of the Meir Yeshiva and said to them as follows. I think you have indeed, says the Chazon Ish, passed over the halachic dateline. And indeed you have to keep Yom Kippur the day after everybody else in Japan thinks it is. Meaning when they say in Japan it's Thursday, it's really Wednesday. Okay? And the reason he gave as follows. There is a perush, there is a commentary on the Gemara called the Baal HaMa'or. The Baal HaMa'or is Rachi HaLevi, also a commentary on the Rif. He's a commentary mainly on the Rif. He lived in Provence in the early Middle Ages, around the 13th century, the same time as the Ramban, Nachmanides, and there's a lot of discussion between them on various issues. And the Baal HaMa'or looked at the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah and said, I think this Gemara means the following. And the Chazon Ish says, and it comes out from that we have a different dateline. We have a halachic dateline. Have a look at the Gemara. The Gemara number 4 deals with the Molad. What is the Molad? The Molad is that moment at which the old month turns into the new month in terms of the moon. The moon passes a certain point at which you're at the end of the old moon, the waning moon, it's the beginning of the waxing moon. We obviously don't have Rosh Chodesh starting in the middle of the day. That's because of the Pasuk. We have an entire new day of Rosh Chodesh from the beginning. It's not like Adar in the morning and Nisan in the afternoon. There's a Pasuk that says we have to do that. However, there is a Molad, and they announce in Shul, as you're probably aware, when they do Rosh Chodesh benching, they announce the exact time of the Molad. Now, the Molad, says the Gemara, cannot just be any old time, and we will only set Rosh Chodesh based on certain principles. Look at number 4. Kisalik Rebbe Zeira, when Rebbe Zeira left, Shalach Lehu, he sent the following instructions. Sarach Sheyehe Laila V'yom Mina Chodesh, that whenever the Molad is, there has to be a night and a day of the new month. We'll see what that means in a minute. V'zosha Amar Abba Abu Ode Rabbi Simlai, and that's the same as Abba, the father of Rabbi Simlai, said the following. Mechashvim et toldatol, we calculate the Molad. Noilad kodem chatzot, if the Nolad falls before chatzot, meaning midday in Yerushalayim, where the Beit Din are sitting, if the Molad is before chatzot, B'yadua, we know, Shenira Samuch L'Shkiyat HaChama, that somewhere in the world, it is just sunset the night before. That we know. Lo Nolad Kodem Chatzot, but if the Molad in Yerushalayim is after midday, B'yadua, then we know, says the Gemara, Shalom Nira Samuch L'Shkiyat HaChama, that it is not anywhere the night before sunset, the beginning of the night before. What's going on here? The Baal HaMa'or and the Chazon Ish say, look, this is what's going on. The Gemara is here setting a dateline. It is saying that at 12 noon in Yerushalayim, that is the last moment where anywhere else in the world, the night before is just starting. After that moment, then everywhere in the world it's already the beginning, you're already into the day. And therefore that's the last point at which they're prepared to declare Rosh Chodesh, and there's a complex calculation. What comes out from that, says the Chazon Ish, is actually, if you imagine this, there's a 24-hour day. So if it's 12 o'clock in Yerushalayim, where is it 6 o'clock in the evening the night before? That's, again, 3/4 of the way around the world. Okay, it turns out to be 270 degrees to the west. Okay? That is where it turns out to be that line. Meaning, when it's 12 o'clock, think about it, when it's 12 o'clock in Yerushalayim, where is it 6 p.m. the day before? And the answer is, think about this in modern day terms. If it's 12 noon here, where is it 6 p.m. the night before? Somewhere in America, somewhere like back there. Okay? Back there.
America? Yeah,
it's back even before America. So the Chazon Ish turns around and says, that's the dateline. That is the halachic dateline. 270 degrees to the west of Yerushalayim. Make it easy. Make it 90 degrees to the east of Yerushalayim, because it's the same thing. Okay? Find the line, he says, which is 90 degrees to the east of Yerushalayim. That's where the day changes, based on this Gemara and based on the Baal HaMa'or. And in fact, if you find that line, you will see, just look at the map in figure number 4 underneath, that's the most complicated source on the sheet. So if you're, everything gets easier from here. Okay? If you look at the map in the middle of page number 3, you'll see that right on the far, there's a map of the Pacific Ocean. On the far left, there's something that says Baal HaMa'or. You see that line where it says Baal HaMa'or just under Australia? That is the line that the Baal HaMa'or, according to the Chazon Ish, says is going to be the dateline. Now, you see that that cuts right through Australia. It cuts through the Indonesia. It goes up into China. And it goes up north into Russia. All of the islands to the east of that line, Japan, New Zealand, the other half of Australia, they're all on the other side of the line. These are all places where, even though they think it's Thursday, we know halachically, says the Chazon Ish, that it's actually Wednesday. They've already gone back. Because the secular line is already quite a long way from there. And therefore the Chazon Ish told them, indeed, if you're living in Japan, you have a problem. And you need to keep things the day before or the day after. Already, it's already the day's gone back a day, and people living in Japan don't halachically know that. The only problem, though, is it cuts through the middle of Australia. And the Chazon Ish brought lots of proofs to say that actually, just like the non-Jewish world doesn't want to have Thursday on one side of the road and Friday on the other, so too with the Jewish world as well. And actually, the Chazon Ish says, instead of cutting through a landmass, once it hits the landmass, it goes around the side. So in Australia, actually, it's all the same day. Baruch Hashem. So that's very happy for the Australians. They can keep Shabbos on a Saturday. They don't have to have one day, one half of Australia, one on the other. However, it does come out, according to the Chazon Ish, and people do indeed keep this, that yes, in Australia, you're on the correct side of the line. But once you go into the sea, you've already gone a day before, because the line goes around the coast. And the question is, well, what does that mean? If I go to the beach in Australia on a Sunday, okay, and I'm sitting happily on the beach, and I decide to take a pleasure ride in a boat, and I ride off into the sea, off the coast of eastern Australia, it may indeed, as I go into the sea, turn into Shabbos. And the question is, where? I mean, where the sea stops and the beach starts? Can I jump in and out? Shabbos, Sunday. Is that how it works? Is it only far enough out that it really turns into the kind of real sea where the land... And that's going to be a real shaila. According to the Chazon Ish, you may indeed end up swimming into Shabbos and swimming back out into Sunday again. And one thing's for sure, New Zealand and Japan and all those places, they're going to have to keep the day after. And indeed, one of my friends, he went to a wedding in New Zealand. His sister got married in New Zealand. She got married on a Sunday. Most people in Chutz La'aretz get married on a Sunday. And for him it was Shabbos. And for her it was Sunday. And he was keeping kind of deraisas on Shabbos and being at the wedding, etc. Now, needless to say, most people who are living in New Zealand, probably all the people, don't do this. They keep Shabbos only on one day, which is Saturday. The question is why? Why aren't they worried about the Chazon Ish? We'll see that in a minute. So that is the view of the Chazon Ish, that if you're anywhere over that line to the east, you're going to have to keep Shabbos a day later, or 2 day Shabbos, etc. And many of the students in Rapatje in the Yeshiva indeed did that. Go over the page, please, to page 4. The students, however, received a very different answer from Rav Tukhachinsky. Rav Yechiel Mikkel Tukhachinsky is a very important figure from this era. You'll have noticed, if you look at the Jewish calendar today, you'll see many of the times are the times in Yerushalayim are set by the Gesher HaChaim, Rav Tukhachinsky. Rav Tukhachinsky wrote a very famous sefer called Gesher HaChaim, which is all the halachas of Avelus. He has a very beautiful introduction to that sefer, nothing to do with this topic, where he talks about life and death, and he gives the famous moshel of the twins in utero, and one of the twins, they live together for this time, and then one of the twins, eventually it's time for them to be born, and it starts descending down into a hole and disappears, and screaming, etc., and all the other twins can hear it screaming, and he thinks that the other twin brother is dead, and actually everyone outside is shouting Mazel Tov, and the twin's born, and he has this whole developed moshel which he brings there, which has nothing to do with this, but it's very beautiful and needs to be read at some stage. But he gave them a very different answer. And he said, no, no, no. That's not what the Balaam Or means. That's not the correct answer. That's not what the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah is talking about. We have a much more straightforward answer. And he says, look at this Medrash in number 5. Says Rav Tukhachinsky, Kashem, or the Gemara of the Medrash says, and he quotes it, Kashem shehatibur hazeh natun be'em tzahesh. Just like a person's belly button, their navel, is in the middle of the person, okay? Kach Eretz Yisrael tiburo shel olam. Eretz Yisrael is the very center of the world. Shinema yoshvel tibur haaretz. Eretz Yisrael yoshevet be'emtzotav shel olam. Eretz Yisrael is in the middle of the world. And Yerushalayim be'emtza Eretz Yisrael. And Yerushalayim is in the middle of Eretz Yisrael, which we'll get back to in a second. He says, look, Eretz Israel is in the middle of the world. So it's very straightforward. The people in the conference in Washington, D.C. thought Greenwich was the middle of the world, and therefore set the line the other side from there. We know that Eretz Israel is the middle of the world, so the line is very straightforward. Just go 180 degrees from Eretz Israel, and that's the line. Nothing to do with the Balaam Or. It's just 180 degrees from Yerushalayim. So that's very nice. And if you draw that line, it turns out that it's in a very different place, and it actually is on the other side of the Pacific, and it cuts through Alaska. Okay? So according to Rabbi Kaczynski, you don't have a problem till you get to Alaska, and everywhere else is on the right side, and we're happy, and Japan's not a problem, and New Zealand's not a problem. They're all within the same secular system that everybody else. The only problem for Rabbi Kaczynski is if you go to Hawaii. You decide to go to Honolulu for a vacation. I don't know if people do that, but maybe they would. So there you have another problem, because in Honolulu, according to Rabbi Kaczynski, they think it's Saturday, but actually it's still Friday. Okay? The other way around? No, the other way around. They think it's Saturday, but actually it's Sunday. And you have to keep Shabbos on Friday. So you'll have to keep Shabbos, according to Rabbi Kaczynski, you'll have to keep Shabbos on Friday. So instead of the Saturday-Sunday double Shabbos, you'll have a Friday-Saturday double Shabbos. I suppose if you were to go to Honolulu and then go get a plane to New Zealand, and if you'd end up keeping 3 days of Shabbos, I don't think that's really possible. But according to Rabbi Kaczynski, he said that is the correct answer. And the people in Kobe had no problem, he says, but if you go to Honolulu, as far as I'm aware, the May Yeshiva never went to Honolulu. At least they didn't tell anybody that they did. Therefore, he said it's not a problem. The only problem, and Chazon Ish vigorously opposed this psak, and said it went against the halacha, and there is a problem with this, which is it's based on a medrash. And this raises one hashkafic halachic issue. Do we base halachic principles on midrashim? There are all sorts of interesting questions that arise like that, including one from Megillas Esther. This is a shir that we could have as an entire shir, really. This is just a teaser, a taster. For example, the Nodib Yehuda was asked a question as follows, nothing to do with this topic. He was asked a question that goes like this. A group of people were kidnapped by bandits on the road, and the bandits said they were going to kill them all. And they really meant it, and these people meant what they said. And one of the women from the group decided to take the initiative into her own hands. And she said to the head of the people who kidnapped them, they said, listen, I'll do you a deal. If I'm prepared to sleep with you, to have relations with you, will you let us all go? And she was a married woman. And he said, I will, and I'm true to my word. And she did, and he let them all go. And they all went free, and they all survived. And the Shiloh then came to the Nodib Yehuda, was this in any way acceptable? What, did she do the right thing? Or is it more important, or in halachically, if you like, are you required to give up your life, maybe even the lives of other people, rather than commit such an aveira? And the Nodib Yehuda talks about Esther. And the same Shiloh comes up with Esther and Ahasuerus. One of the main midrashic questions, according to the midrash, Esther is married to Mordechai. According to the pshat of the psukim, it doesn't sound like she's married to Mordechai, but Chazal said she's married to Mordechai. So how could she possibly then go off and be the queen of Ahasuerus, if she's married already to Mordechai? And the answer was, she's saving the Jewish people. To save the entire Jewish people, this was acceptable. And the Nodib Yehuda gets into an analysis, well, what does it mean, the entire Jewish people? And how many people are you saving? Does it make it worthwhile, etc.? And there's a halachic analysis based on that. That, by the way, has implications in the current, I think we may have mentioned this once before, but it's a very interesting shaila that comes up. If a woman in Israel is recruited, a married woman, into the secret service, and in order to obtain secrets that may lead to the rescue of hundreds of thousands, maybe the saving of all of Klal Yisrael and all people living in Israel, is she allowed to seduce somebody to get hold of these secrets? And that is a shaila that comes up, and there's a whole tshuva which is written on that question based on this. And therefore, again, to what extent do midrashim feed into the halachic process? Big question. People objected to this and said, look, this is a midrash, this is not a halachic source. The Balaam Or, if that's what he means, is a halachic source. This is not. What does it mean Israel is the middle of the world? Okay, the world is a globe. Anywhere is the middle of the world, if you want it to be. Okay, there's no clear middle of anything. However, Yerushalayim is the middle of Eretz Israel. How can Yerushalayim be the middle of Eretz Israel on any definition? Look at a map of Eretz Israel. Yerushalayim will never be in the middle. down and to the side, etc. And therefore the Maharal the middle. The middle is a midrashic, hashkafic concept, meaning the most spiritual place. And I'm not getting into this now, but it's a fascinating idea. If you imagine two lines drawn, they are easily definable. But the middle of anything is actually not there. You can never get to the middle of anything. Because however close to the middle you think you've got, I can always zoom in, and you can make a middle of that. Zoom in, middle of that. Zoom in, middle of that. The middle only exists in infinity. It's an interesting concept. And it's very logical, actually. So that's what this is talking about. The same is true of time, by the way. This will keep you up at night. The presence doesn't really exist, does it? Everything is either just in the past or just in the future. And however much you want to define this is the present, I can always zoom in and say no. It's one or the other side of the line. So actually, the present doesn't exist at all. But that's strange because the past no longer exists because it happened and the future hasn't happened yet. So actually the only thing that does exist in the present, and that is the present, and that's the thing that doesn't exist. That'll keep you scratching your heads at night, okay? One way or the other, said the Gesher HaChaim, then the line has to be drawn somewhere else. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank came back and said something which seems to be in many ways very different. He wrote them a tshuva and he said, you know something folks? We don't have a halachic guideline. We just don't. Chazal never discussed it. They never knew about it. They were not interested in it because that's not something that was relevant in any way in the ancient world. We don't have one. Okay? And our halachic dateline is, guess where? The international dateline. And therefore, there is no Shabbos on Friday or Shabbos on Sunday. Everywhere is exactly where they say it is. And he says that this is the halachic psak. And that is what the people in New Zealand and Honolulu and Japan, this is what they rely on, because obviously it's not feasible for them to be keeping 2 days of Shabbos every week. And this really raises a very important hashgafic question, is where do we find halacha on topics which Chazal just didn't deal with? Do we go looking for indications in the text that we have that are analogous? Or do we say, you know something, they didn't deal with that. We don't have a halakhic source for that. We'll have to work it out from somewhere else. And this is actually a very important question. There are many, many examples. How do we understand the halakhas of electricity? They didn't have electricity back in the day. Did they have electricity? Do we have to say Chazal knew about electricity? And they could have used electricity, they just didn't need to. Or do we say, no, they didn't have electricity, and therefore the Gemara doesn't talk about it. Surrogate parenthood. This is a shear that we have to have at some stage. This is something that people do, not frequently, but on a regular basis these days. You take an egg from one woman, and you put it into another woman, and she acts as a surrogate mother. And therefore you have a split between the birth mother and the genetic mother, and we now have a halachic question. Which is the halachic mother? Is it the genetic mother? Is it the birth mother? Is it both? Two mothers, okay? Two Jewish mothers and two Jewish mothers-in-law eventually, okay? Or is it neither? Maybe you'd need both genetics and birth. How are we going to answer that question? Well, one approach is, let's examine the Gemaras. There are Gemaras that deal with Yibum, and the Gemaras that deal with this, and there's a Medrash, and there's a that, and there's a this. And even though none of them are really talking about surrogacy, maybe they're analogous. Or maybe the answer is no. We just don't have an answer in the Gemara. We'll have to work out some other way to find it. Have a look at this source in number 7, which I want to show you. This actually, I think, is something we need to come back to at some stage. In number 7, at the bottom of page 4, so Rav Ezra Bick, who is a well-known Rav in Gush Etzion, in Yeshiva in Har Etzion, he has a piece here where he talks about egg donations, ovum donations, which is a very big issue now, and increasingly so. There are many women who are having egg donations, giving eggs, taking eggs, all sorts of things going on, especially in America, even in the Jewish community, even in the religious Jewish community, there are all sorts of shilas flying around as to how that works. And he says the following. This is already for an article from 25 years ago, or 20 years ago rather, but he says as following. Look at number 7. Returning to the major question of the halachic model of conception, is there any halachic source sufficient to resolve it? The answer is no. He says no. I propose instead to attempt to discover the general conceptual framework of the sages concerning conception. The launching point for what I've done is the conclusion that no normal halachic proof exists for deciding the question of maternity. He basically says, look, it just doesn't have it in the Gemara. Having accepted that as a starting point, I posited that it would be valid to use an entirely different method in order to reach a conclusion. What does one do when there are no sources for a halachic answer to a pressing question? That's a great question. What do you do? Our usual answer is, hafoichba, hafoichba. Look and look again, again and again. Everything is there. There's always a source. But there are not dozens of halachot, but are there not, sorry, dozens of halachot and legal principles in the Talmud, which have no apparent scriptural source? Where do Chazal get their sources? I think that's also a good question. Are we to assume that there must have been a source? Or the sages of the Talmud were granted prophetic ability to originate halacha? Maybe. In numerous other cases, however, the only source of a halacha is svara, is reason. Although it doesn't represent, strictly speaking, the only logical possibility. The sages have certain conceptions of law and understanding of various concepts which underlay halachic conclusions. The rabbis use their heads. They use their brains. Svara is a very important source of halacha. It's not always a posik. In fact, svara sometimes, reason sometimes overrides a posik. Lama li kra, the Gemara says. Why do I need a posik? Svara, it's a svara. It makes perfect logical sense. Halacha, he says, is riddled with concepts that reflect the assumed conception of the Talmudic sages on a particular topic. In our halachic investigations, we attempt to base all our conclusions on the determination of Talmudic concepts because we accept implicitly the legal formulation of the sages. Rarely does a contemporary halachic discussion investigate the sources of halachic Talmudic concepts, and he goes on from there. I'll leave you to read the rest of page 5 there on your own. I brought quite a large section of his quote. You know, he says, what do we do if we can't find the answer? And he wants to say we have to develop a general hashkafic, if you like, matrix, a framework based on the underlying ideas, and from that we can somehow work out the halachic conclusions and issues which are not directly and specifically covered by the Gemara. This is a very interesting question, and how we do this. Meaning, all of this analysis in the Brisker yeshivas, in the world of Rav Soloveitchik, this Talmudic sort of abstract analysis. He says maybe that's not just abstract. Maybe that leads us to an understanding of the very basic underlying principles, and we need to use those sometimes to recreate halachic answers in different situations. And this is something we need to come back to again. And obviously in a world, in our modern world, where halachic solutions to problems are always being talked about, this may be something that needs to be thought through. And that's what Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank basically said. We have no halachic dateline. Let's not pretend, let's not try and invent one, let's not try and read one in to the Gemara. It's not there. And therefore we can use other sources, if you like. He brings a Gemara there that talks about somebody who doesn't know which day Shabbos is. Someone gets lost in the desert, and they don't know which day Shabbos is. He says whichever day they kind of wake up and start counting, they count 7 days from there, and that becomes the day that they keep Shabbos. There's more to it, obviously, than that, but sometimes that's how we work it. Now, let's go on to a few practical examples before we finish. So we now know that there is maybe a halachic dateline, there's certainly an international dateline, and people are running back and forth across it. What are the issues that come up? So I brought you various examples here. First of all, Shabbos can appear, like I said before, it can go out. Some mitzvahs may have to be repeated, counting the days of Hanukkah, Sefirot HaOmer, etc. Let me give you some examples and see what happens. These are two real examples. On page 6, let's say we're flying from New York to Taiwan. Okay, people do this. You take off in New York on Sunday lunchtime, and you arrive in Taiwan on Monday afternoon, 4 o'clock. You've gone forward an entire day. You've basically missed Sunday night, Monday morning, Monday. You land on Monday afternoon. So basically, you've lost Sunday Mincha Mariv and Monday Shacharis. And the answer is, okay, you've lost them. There's nothing you can do. They didn't happen. You'll get them back, if you like, repeated when you come back the other way. But for now, you've lost them, and that's not such a halachic problem. The only shaila you're going to have is that if you happen to fly on a fast day, it's not a good idea to fly west on a fast day. Okay? If it's in the morning. Your fast will go on forever and ever and ever. And then a shaila needs to be asked, by the way, if you do that. If you are indeed, let's say on Wednesday morning, this week, you're planning to fly to America, and you wake up and your fasting town is Esther, and you get on a plane at 7 o'clock in the morning and you're flying to America, it's going to be Tanis Esther for a good long time. And you need to ask a shaila as to whether you need to fast all day, whether you only need to keep a certain amount. It's obviously going to depend on your health and your general situation. But if you can avoid that, it's not a bad idea to avoid that kind of thing. But the interesting shaila comes the other way around. Okay, you've been in Taiwan for the week, yasher koach, you've done good business, you're coming back on Friday, you take off on Friday morning, and you fly towards New York. So as I said to you before, on the way back, everything gets speeded up. You fly into Friday afternoon, Friday evening, and it becomes Shabbos. And then again, it becomes Thursday night, and you end up flying through Thursday night into Shabbos, into Friday morning. The place can say, look, if you can avoid this flight, avoid it, because you end up on a plane on Shabbos. But is there really any problem being on a plane on Shabbos? Can you be on a cruise on Shabbos? Yes. Of course you can. They have cruises that go on Shabbos all the time. So if you imagine you went on, they had a plane cruise of some kind. You're on a plane for 4 or 5 days. There may be such things one day when we, I don't know, fly to Mars or what have you. There was in the news this morning. They were saying that they think there's going to be a manned mission to Mars by 2040. 2040. Mind you, 2040 isn't as far away as you think. But I sometimes say to my students when they're stressing about their children's education, you know, they say to me, oh, how can I move to Israel? How can I make Aliyah? What about my kids' education? This, I said, listen, your kids, at least some of them, will be graduating high school in the late 2040s. Do you have any idea what the world will look like in 2048? You know, so why are you stressing now about that? You can't work everything out in advance. But apparently, so let's say we're on a plane all the time. You can be on a plane on Shabbos. It's not ideal, but you have to keep Shabbos. The post can say Taka et Shabbos. You don't have to make Kiddush. You don't have to make Havdalah, but you have to keep Shabbos just for 2 or 3 hours, and then you cross the dateline. You'll have to decide which dateline you're using: the Chazon Ish's dateline, which will come first; the international dateline, which will come next; or Rav Tukhachinsky's, which will come last. Or there are others. For simplicity's sake, I only gave you those examples. But you will have to keep a little bit of Shabbos at least. I don't know if you have to sing Zmiras on the plane. Shalom Aleichem. But you will have to keep a little bit of Shabbos. But if you can avoid that flight, therefore, that is definitely a good thing to do. And I suppose that if you go to the bathroom, you won't be able to lock the door and turn all the lights on. You'll just have to sing or something like that in the bathroom so that everybody knows that you're there. Maybe don't sing Shalom Aleichem in the bathroom. Okay. Go on to page number 7, please. Let me give you some other examples of what the post can say and how they deal with this. What happens if you've already done a mitzvah, but then you fly across the dateline and it comes up again? Let's think about Megillah. You already read Megillah, but then you fly across the dateline and it's already Purim all over again. Okay? The answer is that Megillah and Matzah and Shofar, the poskim can say, are a one-off thing. Once you did it, you did it. I mean, Matzah is interesting. Imagine that you flew on Chol HaMoed, first day Chol HaMoed, back across the dateline, you ended up back in Pesach all over again, back on Seder night. I'm not sure that that's something which you want to do. Well, if you seek a second day Yom Tov, well, you'll be in Chutzlar, won't you? So you have to keep second day Yom Tov anyway. Unless you say you're Israeli and you're in second day Yom Tov, you don't have to keep. So then we can have a whole share on second day Yom Tov, which is about second day Yom Tov, which is not for now. Yes.
What about the other way around? If you go and you miss Megillah,
right, you miss Megillah, but the truth is, once you've missed Megillah, you are now on a date which there is no chiyuv of Megillah, so you'll end up actually skipping it in that sense. It's very hard to imagine how that would happen. You might skip the night Megillah, you wouldn't skip the day Megillah, would you? Because let's say you got on a plane before Purim, okay, on Wednesday afternoon, and you skipped all the way to Thursday night. I suppose you could miss the whole thing, couldn't you? You could miss the whole thing. So maybe you'd have to read Megillah on the plane when it was just still Wednesday evening, okay? And then the morning Megillah, you'd have to... it's against the Megillah, basically. It should be avoided. But you could end up skipping it. There is this whole discussion as to whether you could end up skipping Purim in Israel anyway by negotiating yourself around Yerushalayim. Do you want to keep 2 days Purim here? Do you want to keep 1 day? Do you want to keep 0 days, etc.? Hanukkah is much more interesting because that's much more likely to happen. People fly all over on Hanukkah and they end up in a place which is keeping the same as they did last night. What do they do? Okay, what do they do? So there are some poskim I brought down who says what? That say, no, you just fall in step with wherever you are. You go 1, 2, 3, then maybe you skip 4, and you go 5, 6, 7, 8, and then you're done. However, others say no. Chanukah is a chiyuv on you, okay, on you and your house, and you have to light whichever light you're on. Therefore, if you lit 3 last night, you have to light 4 to the next night. Ah, but what if everybody else is lighting 3 the next night? How can you light 4 candles when everybody else is lighting 3? So Rav Eliashiv says, you can't. So what do? You light 1. Because that's the basic halacha. The basic halacha of Chanukah is 1 candle. Ner ish u'beito. And therefore you can't do the mahadrin manahad mahadrin because it's going to cause everyone to get upset with you. So you'll just do the basic 1 candle. On the last night of Chanukah, sounds like the beginning of a song, right? On the last night of Chanukah, when you're already done, and everybody else is on number 8, so you'll light 8 candles without a brocha, like as a Maris Ayin thing, so no one thinks you're not lighting candles. But people get into these shilas. Tefillah is another interesting thing. If you missed tefillah, so you missed it, what can you do? You can't reinvent the day. But what if you repeat the day? I daven Sunday Shacharis. Do I have to daven again Sunday Shacharis? So there, some places can say yes, some places can say no. And the compromise position is you end up in the very interesting question of a tefillat nedavah. You can, under certain circumstances, say a tefillat nedavah. You can volunteer a tefillah, even though it's not a chiyuv. But there are strings attached, and then you have to have all sorts of extra kavanot, and it's not such an easy thing to do. Halal, you can say again without a brocha. That's not hard. But there are other things with other brochas that you're going to have to work around, that maybe you can't say in a tefillat nedavah. Musaf as well, you can't, and therefore maybe you'll have to daven mentally. You get a bit interesting shilas. Can you say a brocha in your head? Maybe if you have a suffix, you'd have to say a bracha in your head rather than say it out loud. These things have to be thought through. Sfiras HaOver actually is very easy. If you miss a day for whatever reason, you can count during the day without a bracha, and then you can count from. You're very rarely going to miss 24 hours, and therefore that's not going to be a problem. Fast days we've kind of spoken about a little bit. There is a concept in the Gemara in Tanis. So look in number 8 for a second. The Amor of Chista, Kol Tanis Shaloi Shaka Alav Chama, any Tanis which you didn't make it till nightfall, Loi Shmei Tanis, is not really a Tanis. And therefore the question remains, do you have to, if you end up accelerating your fast or decelerating your fast, do you have to do that? And there are different poskim that say different things. Most of the poskim will say that if you are lucky enough to be on a plane coming to Israel from America and you have a very short fast, okay, so, that was helpful for you that day. If you're having a very long fast, as I said before, you will have to ask a shaila because there are poskim that will say you should really fast the whole thing. But obviously, if you're not capable of fasting, it's going to depend when it is. Most people are not flying on Tisha B'Av for reasons independent of fasting. People get a bit superstitious about that, even though the halacha, you're allowed to fly on Tisha B'Av. But hopefully nobody is flying on Yom Kippur. People end up driving on Yom Kippur, that's another thing. One of my friends his wife had a baby on Yom Kippur. He was the rov of the shul in London, and of course he has to drive to the hospital on Yom Kippur. So then the shaila comes up, it's a Maris Ayin shaila. Should he drive down the middle of the Golders Green Road in his yontif clothes, waving to everybody on Yom Kippur, or should he put on a pair of jeans and drive around the back or something? That's a separate shaila. I think he drove down the middle of the Golders Green Road waving at people. I think that that was what appealed to him at the time. But I think that's probably the right answer as well. In terms of an interesting shaila, if you're in the middle of a fast day and you go back a day, and it's no longer the fast day. So you've been fasting all through Thursday, but it turned into Wednesday. Do you have to keep fasting? I mean, now it's Wednesday. You'll have to fast tomorrow. But you have to keep fasting. So some person can say, yeah, you can't. If you've been fasting, you go to the end. Another say, no, it's Wednesday. I've brought you the different names of what people say in different ways. Bris Mila is a fascinating question. Pidyon HaBen and Bar Mitzvah. There is actually a fascinating shaila with Bar Mitzvah as to how do you calculate Bar Mitzvah? At what point do you become a Bar Mitzvah? Now, we generally go according to... What's that?
In our family, they've changed it.
What do you mean?
From one Shabbat to the next.
Oh. So that's when they have the celebration.
If they came for the marriage.
I understand. Good, but at what moment do you become chayav in mitzvot? Let's say I was born right at the end of the day, okay, on the 15th of Nisan. When I become bar mitzvah, do I become bar mitzvah only at the same time of day on the 15th of Nisan 13 years later? Or do we say, no, once the 15th of Nisan begins, already the night before, you're bar mitzvah, it doesn't matter that you're that day. And there is a machlokas on this. There are some views that say, no, you have to have 24 hours times 13 years, and at the moment, 24 hours, like exactly the 13th year, you become a bar mitzvah. For most people, that's irrelevant. I actually was born on Yom Kippur. I was born on Yom Kippur. I was born during the Elah, okay? Someone's got to be born during the Elah. So I was born just like an hour before the end of Yom Kippur. So the Shiloh is, 13 years later, do I only become bar mitzvah just in the middle of Yom Kippur or not? If I were to change time zones in between, do I have to take that into account? I once made a joke at the Shabbos table that I was born during the Elah. Isn't it lucky they didn't call me Neil? Somebody made the point, which is that they know somebody that also was born during Neil, and they were called Neil, and therefore, what are the chances of that? It can happen, and the Yom Kippur is always an interesting day to be born. However, when it comes to Bris Mila, what are you saying?
In Adar.
In Adar. Oh, Adar is always, everyone loves to talk about Adar, the twins born just on, on Rosh Chodesh, and one is just before Rosh Chodesh, just on Rosh Chodesh. Adar is always interesting. My son was born in Adar Sheni, and so but a Bris Mila is an interesting question. What happens if you took a baby with you on a plane, 3 or 4 days old? Not to be recommended, but let's say you have to fly somewhere. Everybody knows the Bris Mila is on the same day of the week that the baby was born. The baby was born Tuesday, the Bris Mila is next Tuesday. If it's on time, everyone knows that. But what if you fly over the dateline? Do you count? Well, it has to be 8 days. The Yom HaShmini, meaning the baby has to be 8 days, has to have gone through 7 nights, the 8th day. Or do you say, no, this is on the calendar, the Yom HaShmini, since the baby was born, and the baby will have the Bris Mila at 7 days.
You took a baby from London to Israel 3 days old.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Somebody who didn't have a mother.
Gosh, so people do travel with very small babies. So if you do have this issue with the Bris Mila, Pidyon HaBen, etc. And again, I brought you here, Rav Chaim Kanievsky says the mitzvahs are date specific, okay, even though the baby might be 7 days old. Rav Scheinberg says no, it's age specific, and you have a whole discussion about that. When it comes to Shiva Nikiyim, these are also issues as well. A woman may be going to the mikveh and counting her 7 days, but she flies over the deadline and she'll end up, actually, the 7 days are a day later than she expected. They're already, they say that she has to have 7 full days. She can't just play around with the dates, and there have to be 7 days. Although we do say, and this is definitely the halacha, that if a woman, let's say, does her hefsikara in New York, and she's flying to Israel, she'll end up going to mikveh quite a few hours earlier than she would have done had she stayed in New York. And that's fine. There's no problem with that. It's already nighttime. She doesn't have to count the extra hours. And I brought you other examples as well. So you see from here that actually, this is a very lemaisa question. Practically speaking, people are running all over the world these days. They're running more than they used to do. You'll soon have questions about people in space, all sorts of things. We need to have solutions to these questions. We had Ilan Ramon, who unfortunately didn't make it back, but he was in space, you remember a few years ago, making Kiddush in space. My father-in-law always says, ask him, when should you say Kriya Shema if you're in outer space? He says you should be saying it the whole time if you're in outer space. Don't stop saying Kriya Shema. So that's usually a good answer to the question. But people are going to have to. There's a pasuk that says, all your days on the earth, you'll keep mitzvahs. So are you potter from mitzvahs when you get to space? If we have a manned mission to Mars and there are Jewish people on Mars, will that be an issue with mitzvot as well? And these may seem like theoretical questions, but they become real questions. Cloning is a fascinating question. People are probably cloning people as we speak. They're not meant to, but I'm sure that there are people doing all sorts of interesting experiments. They've cloned animals, sheep, all sorts of things. So if you clone people, are those people Jewish? If you clone yourself, you may not feel that's something that you want to do, but you might. If you clone yourself, how are you related to that person? Is that your sister? Is that your twin? Is that you? Is that your daughter? That's a good question. And we need answers. There are going to be people calling up rabbis in 15, 20, 25 years saying, hey rabbi, it's time for mincha. We've got 9 guys and a clone. What shall we do? 9 guys and a clone? What's going to be? And someone's going to have an answer to these questions. Baruch Hashem, we have some very expert minds working on these things day in, day out. But the International Day of Land is a question right now, and hopefully we are going to be a little bit more educated on it. Next week, I would like to speak about something a little bit more controversial. I'd like to speak about women poskot, rabbis and yuetzot halacha, which is something which I think is right here and right now, even before we get to Mars. And hopefully tune in next week, we'll do that. Be'ezrat Hashem.